Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. Happy to be here with you today. This is going to be a part two of a podcast that we did earlier on the political career of Senator Howard Stevenson. And joined again in the studio is former Senator Howard Stevenson and Julie Stevenson. But, you know, the last time we sat down and chatted, we talked about your political career, and we really didn't. We only had 20 minutes, and it doesn't do your career justice.
But, oh, not at all.
but this episode, I want to focus on your career as the president of the Utah Taxpayers Association. I don't know how many people know what the logo is for the Utah Taxpayers Association, but it is a bulldog. Yeah. And I don't know if it was a self-portrait they did of you, and that's how they came about. But I don't know many people who have only had one job in their life. And you have worked your entire 44-year career at the Utah Taxpayers Association. And I about fell off my chair when I read... Well, first off, I read it was announced April 15th will be your last day as the head of the Utah Taxpayers Association. But I read with interest your corner that you've done every week. Have you written one of those every week?
Every week, every month.
Every month for 40. Well, how long have you been the president?
About 30 of those years.
So for 30 years. And I, you know, I'm a political science major, so I have no idea what 30 times 12 is. That's 360. Is that what that is? What? How many editions is that? How many times have you had to write that? 30 times 12. What is that? Oh boy! Well, this is fantastic. This is
who's counting?
Yeah, 300. I can do math. Apparently, 360. Articles you have authored in your career. But
I also authored for several years a weekly business enterprise column.
Oh, well,
in addition to that, that was a grind.
And but once again, I feel no need to brown nose you. Like 2 years ago, I would have just been completely like up in your grill. Wow, what a writer! But you're actually a good writer. So, but the thing that I was most amazed with was the number of people who have come through your organization that you have mentored and helped guide their career, and they've gone on to be. Business leaders in the state and nation, and I do want to highlight some of them, because you did as you talked through your career and the things that you did. But I'm going to force you to narrow down one accomplishment in your 44 years that you're the most proud of as an advocate for taxpayers. I know there's many, but I want you to think about one of those that you're most proud of, and then I'll weigh in and tell you which one I think you should be most proud of. But you go first.
Are we talking taxes, not education reform?
Taxes.
Okay.
Taxes.
I would have to say removing sales taxes from business inputs.
That is the exact one I was going to say. It was pretty monumental, and it took how many years? It took a number of years.
To finally get it all done, it took 24 years. And, 24 of the 26 years.
And I don't think
that's why I was able to leave on that final year. And we only tied it to something else in order to get
it to a court case.
Yeah.
If
the court would decide.
Yeah, if the court decided on the Wayfair case, it would provide the revenue needed to be able to implement the inputs tax.
So the second most important tax issue would be truth in taxation, but we got that done before I got in the legislature. That was 1985. And then we've been protecting it ever since.
Yeah, because I was a county commissioner in Weber County
Did you hate that law?
I just hated you. Like we, I mean, every time, and the reason we did, I mean, if other than, I mean, as though I needed another reason to hate you, but the reason that we hated you was because counties were not on the same fiscal year as a city. And we had to go through it twice. We had to sit through once when we adopted the budget at the end of the year, and we had to acknowledge we were going to raise taxes to adopt the budget. And then in 6 months, everybody had forgotten, and then we ripped the Band-Aid off of that scab and had to talk about it all over again.
But we fixed that.
You did fix it. But not for when you. I was there. And so I have scars from where that Band-Aid got ripped off four separate times.
But still, it's difficult to increase property taxes in Utah because you have to do it transparently. It doesn't limit property tax increases. It just says if you're willing to take the pain as an elected official by having it published far and wide and printed on everybody's assessment notice with the time and the date of the hearing and the amount, the exact impact on your property. And then you can show up with pitchforks, hanging ropes, and torches and tell these folks that you're not going to stand for it anymore. At that time, our property taxes were 24th highest in the nation. Now they're 39th.
Which is remarkable. And I will tell you that I learned quickly there were some things that the general public were okay with you raising taxes for, and there were many things they were not.
Yeah.
We tried to, you know, one of the other things is, I don't know what you had to do with this, but as a county, we had to set up a municipal services fund where we had to account for what kind of municipal services were being performed
to the unincorporated
areas.
Right.
And that was
a court case that made that.
That's right. And our auditor said, you've got to put this in place. And we said, we can't do this without imposing a tax increase on those citizens in those. And that was what it was all about, because citizens in municipal areas,
they didn't want to pay for the police protection in the unincorporated
areas. They were,
they had been.
And
double taxation.
So we put that on the, you know, we put that on the agenda to raise taxes. And I mean, it wasn't just one pitchfork. People brought in two just in case they got somebody stuck on the first one. They had a spare one to use.
Here's a quote that I think it's suitable for family radio, but family podcast. But one commissioner said, after going through that awful, awful pain of the public screaming at them over tax increases, he said, "I would rather run across the stage naked than ever go through truth and taxation again."
Wow. I'm at a loss for words. I have so many things I could say. I don't know who that would be painful for, them or the people in the audience with the pitchforks torches. That'd empty the room. Yeah, empty the room. But there's so many accomplishments in your 44 year career, and you came right out of college with a master's degree from BYU, is that correct?
In public administration, so that I would know how the enemy thinks,
right?
Because my job in life was to be a taxpayer advocate.
I think I remember reading this, that you at 13 decided that you were going to be a taxpayer advocate when you heard Ronald Reagan's fundraising speech for Barry Goldwater.
A Time for Choosing.
You can look it up
on YouTube. It's a half hour. It will make you stand up and salute, because it helped me to know that we need to keep government off our backs and out of our pockets. And government was too big. And so that kind of drove me to want to be a taxpayer advocate. And I didn't even know about the Taxpayers Association even when I was in college, but I was ready to graduate, and there was this hand-scrawled note on the public administration office saying that Taxpayers Association is looking for a research analyst, and they hadn't hired anybody for 14 years and didn't hire again for another 14 years. So
do you think Jack Olson actually wrote that hand-scrawled
They phoned up.
They picked up a landline.
Some secretary wrote it and stuck it up on the wall. And there were more than a dozen of my fellow graduates who were interviewing for the job, but I knew it was mine. I've never been more confident about a job interview than I was that one.
Well, that's good you were, because it's the only job you ever had. True. So I'm glad it worked out for you, because who knows what your career would have looked like had you not gotten that one job. Another interesting fact, I had no idea I should have been calling you Lieutenant the entire time.
Yeah, Second Lieutenant.
Oh, Second Lieutenant.
Yeah, I'm not a full...
Oh, you know, okay. Well, it's good we clarified that.
You have to actually
that. Do
things
to.
But I had an Air Force ROTC scholarship when I got back from my mission to England. My draft number was 55, and I decided if I'm going to Vietnam, I want to be in the air, not on the ground. I'm kind of a wuss that way. I'd rather be flying than down on the ground.
And is that where you proposed to Julie, was in the air?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were doing stalls over Utah Lake. And that's when I knew, man, this girl is not scared of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you want to tell the rest of that story, but I think she thought you were a little insincere while you were doing stalls over the Great Salt Lake. But so you go on, you get the job, and then I loved this, that you had to, I mean, this is what year? What year is this?
77.
Yeah. The internet, Al Gore hadn't even thought up the internet at this point.
No.
He hadn't even thought of it. So to get these budgets, you were driving around the state, picking them up, and they were handwritten.
A lot
budgets.
Of them were just scrawled on a piece of paper, almost on the back of an envelope.
And you tell the
story. They
weren't
following the law. The law was very clear. You had to show in tabular form 3 years, last year prior, this year estimate, budget and estimate, and the future year proposal. And
nobody was doing that.
Yeah, and I had to add them up in my hotel room. Jack Olson was a slave driver at that time, and they didn't add up. So I'd have to call the... county auditor and say, hey, you're off by X amount. Where's the mistake? Oh, thanks for catching that. But today you didn't have electronic spreadsheets in those days.
No.
You didn't have.
It wasn't adding it for you.
No.
You had a 10 key.
No. Yeah. And then you had to type it up.
Yeah. You mentioned that in your article, that you would type up the report. And I had to pause for a minute and think, yeah, you would have typed that out, probably used a lot of whiteout and backspacing. You would have typed that out. And for the younger podcast listeners, should we have any, a typewriter, a little arm went up with the die cast letter and struck the paper through a piece of ink, carbon ink or ink ribbon. And that's probably what you used, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's all we did have. And then we got a IBM memory typewriter. It was really
cool. You thought you were cooking with gas at that point, right?
Yeah. meeting with county and school officials face to face on those circuits driving up and down the state was really a great experience, because I got to know them and they got to know us as a Taxpayers Association. And often they would thank us for helping them. And one particular Sam Taylor down in Moab, he was the publisher of the Times Independent down there and also a county commissioner. And I remember him saying once that Jack Olson told us we needed to increase our property tax rate by a small amount. And that actually helped us to avoid a much bigger tax problem later on. So, and the Taxpayers Association hasn't always been, and even on truth and taxation hearings, we will often show up and defend the county commission or the school board and say they haven't increased the rate and it has been deflated because they can't take inflation. And so the amount they get is last year's amount plus new growth. And so they don't get any adjustment for inflation. So even we say you have to adjust it every 5 or 8 years. And so we often would show up and say, this is justifiable.
I never, ever found the Utah Taxpayers Association unreasonable. You could sit down with you and your staff, and if you had a story to tell and a case to make, you listened and then made a determination on where you were going to be, which I respected you for that. But one of the things you do in this kind of final, your swan song 360th edition of the, yeah.
And by the way, they can get it by going to utahtaxpayers.org, click on the newsletter and
right.
Go to the current newsletter, scroll down, and you can see this final one. And then
yeah, there's a plug. Thanks, Rusty Cannon. There's a plug for you. UtahTaxpayers.org, right?
Right.
But one of the things you did in this newsletter, which I know this about you. I don't think everybody else knows this about you. I think a lot of people view you as that logo of the bulldog. But I was pretty moved by the fact that in all of these things you talked about the staff people who helped you accomplish that and who spearheaded that on behalf of the Taxpayers Association. And I just want to kind of go through that group of people over the years you've been there and where they are now.
Yeah.
And the very first hire was Howard Headley,
right,
that you hired.
Right.
And I was upset that he was mentioned in this because we've done battle from banks and credit unions, and I read all the way to the end hoping my name would be mentioned in this swan song article. It was not.
Howard's dad was Dick Headley, mm-hmm. Richard Headley, who ran for governor of Michigan,
right?
Barely lost, even though it was really Democrat at the time. And he was the father of the Headley Amendment, which was so much more reasonable than the Howard Jarvis Prop 13 in California. It was a tax and spending limitation constitutional amendment, which has ensured that Michigan is not Illinois. Illinois is the worst budget, worst. Red ink that's going to last for centuries.
Yeah, this rant sponsored by Howard Headley. But Howard was your first. What was his title?
Research analyst.
Research analyst, which is what you had been hired as.
Right. And then when I went to the legislature, he was advanced to be vice president and chief lobbyist because I didn't lobby while I was serving in the legislature. So he and Greg Friede were responsible for getting the bills across the line.
Which was, I love the story you saying when you ran for the legislature, you had an agreement with the board that they allowed you to run, but you also said to them, but I may or may not vote for what your positions are, and they gave you that pass.
Well, they said that to me.
Okay.
They are the ones who said, we want you to know that you're not obligated to vote for the position.
And you didn't always get
100%
in your rankings, your scorecard for the.
Sometimes they get it wrong.
Right, exactly. But the other thing I thought was fascinating is that you went on and one day Ed Main showed up, who was the head of the AFL-CIO, and said, how do you do this? How do you navigate this? And you told him how you had done it, mm-hmm. And how you worked through it so that there wasn't a massive conflict for you. And I never ever since felt that way. I know others. I know that the newspaper, you tell that story about Dan Berman as well. But I know others may have, but I never ever saw you conflicted on something. In my opinion, I think you threaded the needle masterfully. But there was Howard Headley. Then who was after? Who came after? Was it Mike German after Howard Headley?
Greg Friede.
Greg Friede, that's right. Now, yeah. Howard went on to become the head of the Utah Bankers Association.
Right.
And
Greg Friede went to the head of the Utah Mining Association.
And then went on to Merit Medical.
Right,
and
where he is now.
And then who? And all of these are all kind of giants in the lobbying community and in really in the state of Utah. Then after Greg Friede was
Wes Quinton.
Wes Quinton, who went on to the Farm Bureau,
right?
Correct.
And then to the LDS Church Ranch system.
Okay.
He also went back to Duke, a law school, and got his with I think six kids. Was in law school, if you can believe that.
Well, I think that's what happens after you work for the LDS Church. You're like, I got to go make some money. And I'm tired of paying them paying me, and then I give it back to them.
Well, now he's back running the ranch down in Florida, the biggest.
Oh yeah, the biggest cattle ranch
anywhere.
I think. It's massive.
Yeah,
church's largest landholder in Florida, as you all know. And then after him was Mike German.
Right.
Yeah. And Mike German went on to work for Congressman Jason Chaffetz.
Yeah.
Where is Mike now? Do you know?
He's in Arizona having fun.
And after Mike German, was Billy next after Mike?
Royce.
That's right. How could we forget Royce Van Tassel?
The only human being
who owns a plywood bow tie.
So he went on to head the State Charter School Association and still is there.
Yes. Also a presence up on Capitol Hill after
Billy Hesterman.
Billy Hesterman.
And by the way, Billy Hesterman's dad is my cousin.
Really?
His dad.
Gosh, I'm glad I didn't ever say anything about you then.
Bill Hesterman.
To Billy.
Daddy-O on KNAC Radio. And Senator Gene Davis, worked with Daddy-O. And he was the number one disc jockey in the Intermountain West. And he's the one who discovered and promoted the Beach Boys. And that's why the Beach Boys wrote the song Salt Lake City will be coming soon. They started in Lagoon, and it was Bill Hesterman.
Really?
So Billy Hesterman III came to work for the Taxpayers Association. And so we both had the same grandmother, well, great-grandmother for him.
Interesting. And then he went on to work at Holland & Hart in their government affairs division.
Right.
And now... So that takes us up to present, correct?
Right.
After Billy?
Now we have Rusty Cannon.
And do you think the Cannon family sat around and thought, what are the other names we can use to go with Cannon? I mean, Shot Cannon. Is there a Shot Cannon? Or do you know the other siblings besides Rusty?
I don't. His name is Russell, but don't tell anyone I said that.
You said that. Okay. Please, listeners, don't say that. Former Senator Howard Stevenson and the president of the Utah Taxpayers Association, after 44 years at the Taxpayers Association, retiring. I don't think you're going to completely go away. I feel like you're going to be around.
Yeah, I'll be holding people's feet to the fire because I wasn't here for a job. I was here to save Utah, save America. And I can say that when we had this goal that we wanted Utah to have the best economy in the nation, many decades ago, we didn't do it because having a good economy is just good in its own sake. It's because families benefit from good jobs. And we shouldn't, if their two parents have young children or in the workforce, it should be because they choose to, not because they have to. And we want our young people to be able to stay here if they want to stay here with their careers. And we now have, for the last 13 years, the Art Laffer's analysis with the Rich States, Poor States publication has shown Utah to have the best economic outlook of all 50 states, 13 years running.
And it's only been published for 13 years.
That's correct. And all the other states that are trying to reach us are jockeying in between second and fifth position, you know, just you'll see them changing every year, but we are number one every year, and that is exceptional. And it's because of the changes in tax and regulatory policy and other things that we and others have helped to do.
We're going to have you back because even in part one and part two, we didn't even begin to scratch the surface on what you've done for education, which is, I think, you think these other things you've done are monumental, but the thing that I believe you've done that's been, will be most remembered and more monumental is how you're helping a generation that doesn't even know and probably won't even know how you helped them, because what you've done in education has been phenomenal. But we promise our listeners that they'll only have to endure the sound of my voice for about 20 minutes. So this has been another edition of Stokes and Folks. We hope you enjoyed this chat with the former president of the Utah Taxpayers Association. And we'll hope to talk to you again next week. Thank you, Connor Sorensen. And thank you, Julie Stevenson, for being here. And subscribe and like us wherever you get your podcasts.